Imagine you are an executive at, say, Amazon, Meta, or Google. You've got, I don't know, $3 billion worth of cutting-edge AI chips sitting in a climate-controlled warehouse.
Just waiting to be deployed.
Exactly. They're just sitting there. Yeah. And every single day, those chips aren't racked and running. You are bleeding millions of dollars in deferred compute revenue.
You're absolutely desperate to plug them in.
Right. But you can't. Because out in some massive field in Texas or North Carolina, the dirt simply isn't perfectly flat yet. Welcome to today's deep dive.
It really is the ultimate bottleneck in the modern tech race, isn't it? I mean, you literally cannot build the cloud without moving the earth first.
You really can't. And that physical reality brings us to a pretty fascinating situation in the public markets right now. Because normally when you look at a balance sheet for an engineering and construction firm, you expect a lot of volatility.
Oh, yeah. It's historically a hyper-cyclical, heavily commoditized industry.
Right. You win a bid, you lose a bid. Maybe bad weather destroys an entire quarter. And you have thousands of these fragmented local players fighting over, like, basis points of margin on government highway projects.
But then you look at a company like Sterling Infrastructure, ticker STRL.
Yes, Sterling. Their traditional E&C model has basically been flipped completely upside down. We are looking at their e-infrastructure segment generating over 20% adjusted EBITDA margins. And for a sophisticated institutional investor, which is exactly who you are listening to this deep dive, you know that you're constantly hunting for durable alpha.
Which is precisely the debate raging on the buy side right now. I mean, the market is fully aware that data centers are booming. We all know AI is driving this massive infrastructure spend.
And Sterling stock price has absolutely reflected that secular tailwind.
It has. But the real question, the one that really separates the tourist from the long-term holders, is whether those 20%+ margins are just some cyclical peak driven by, you know, temporary supply-demand imbalance.
Or if Sterling has engineered a truly sustainable structural competitive moat. And that is our mission today. We are taking a massive stack of equity research. So we've got detailed reports from William Blair, Stiefel, D.A. Davidson, and Sidoti.
A lot of heavy reading.
Yeah, ton of data. And we are synthesizing all that with raw, unfiltered expert network transcripts from AlphaSense. We really need to stress test the durability of Sterling's market position. Like, why are they currently dominating this mission-critical infrastructure space? And can anyone actually catch them?
Let's start at the absolute ground level, literally, because to understand how you defend a 20% margin in construction, we have to look at the heavy iron barrier to entry.
Right. Walk me through the actual physical scale we are talking about here.
Well, we really have to recalibrate our entire understanding of a construction site. When a hyperscaler builds a new mega campus, we are talking about 60 to 120 acres of raw, often incredibly complex terrain.
So you're moving millions of cubic yards of earth.
Exactly. Millions of yards of earth. You're stabilizing soil, excavating solid rock. You cannot just show up with a couple of rented bulldozers. In fact, according to the research from Stiefel, starting just one of these mega projects requires approximately $200 million in heavy equipment.
$200 million. Just to start.
Just for the iron. Plus upwards of $50 million in working capital.
Wow. Okay, so it's a bit like the airline industry, right? You can't just lease a few bulldozers and expect to bid on a 100-acre AI megacampus. The upfront capital and the physical footprint required basically automatically locks out the highly fragmented lower-tier players.
Completely locks them out.
But let me push on that. I'm looking at the William Blair note here, and they point out that Sterling is 3 to 4 times larger than their next closest competitor for these large, complex terrain projects.
Yeah.
Why can't a well-funded regional player just go out, secure some private equity financing, lease $200 million worth of equipment, and bid against them?
Because leasing introduces an absolutely unacceptable variable for the client, which is availability risk. There is this phenomenal insight in the AlphaSense transcripts from his senior construction manager at Amazon.
Oh, right. The guy who literally awards these massive contracts.
Exactly. He highlighted that Sterling, operating primarily under their Plateau and Petito subsidiaries, they stand out specifically because they outright own their massive fleet of heavy equipment.
So they aren't reliant on the rental market.
Right. When you rely on leasing, you are entirely at the mercy of regional equipment shortages. Think about it. If a massive storm hits the southeast and all the leased excavators are diverted to disaster recovery, your multi-billion-dollar data center project just halts.
Wait, help me reconcile that, though. Usually, the biggest buyer in the room, like an Amazon or a Meta, they use their massive size to ruthlessly crush contractor margins. You're saying their desperation for speed completely neutralizes their pricing power.
It completely inverts the traditional bidding dynamic. Hyperscalers are not price constrained right now, they're capacity constrained.
Okay, that makes sense.
Think about the math of a data center build. The site development, so the clearing, the grading, all the underground utilities, that's often less than 10% of the total project cost.
But it represents 100% of the critical path.
Exactly. You cannot pour the foundation, you cannot erect the steel, and you certainly cannot install those expensive servers until the dirt is absolutely perfect.
So if Sterling comes in and says, look, we have the owned equipment ready to deploy tomorrow, we can guarantee the site will be ready on time, but it costs a premium.
The hyperscalers simply don't blink. They pay it because a cascading delay on the foundation costs them infinitely more in deferred compute revenue than the extra 10% they pay Sterling on the dirt work. They are entirely willing to pay a premium for absolute schedule assurance.
Schedule assurance.
Yeah.
And there's another massive barrier to entry here that goes beyond just the physical equipment, which is bonding capacity.
For surety bonds. Yeah. To even bid on a $400 million hyperscale site prep job, you need an insurance company to issue a performance bond guaranteeing you can actually finish the work.
And you don't get a $400 million bond without a fortress balance sheet.
Exactly. So between the $200 million in heavy iron, the working capital requirements, and the massive bonding capacity needed, the drawbridge is essentially pulled up on the lower tier competitors.
I want to dig into another piece of this schedule assurance puzzle, actually, because there was a really striking conversation in those AlphaSense transcripts with a VP of operations at a competing construction firm.
Ah, the Ames VP call.
Yeah, let's call it the Ames VP call. They noted that profit margins on these data center jobs can be 2 to 3 times higher than a standard government highway job. But they brought up a specific hurdle that eliminates most bidders right away, which is safety.
Safety is absolutely paramount. I mean, to a hyperscaler, a major injury or a fatality on site is a catastrophic event.
Right. It's not just an OSHA fine.
No, it halts the project for an investigation, and it damages the reputation and the perceived value of that entire multi-billion dollar campus. They are terrified of safety incidents.
Well, the sources note Sterling's safety record is roughly 10 times better than the industry average.
10 times.
Yeah. But let's explain the actual mechanism there. How exactly does a company achieve a 10x better safety record on a chaotic, muddy, heavy industrial site? Is it just like better training manuals?
No, it goes directly back to the fleet ownership and the scale we just talked about. Mm-hmm. When you own your own pristine late model equipment, it breaks down less often.
Oh, sure. Less jury rigging on site.
Right. And when you have the scale to employ full-time veteran heavy equipment operators with full benefits, rather than relying on transient day labor subcontractors, your site control increases exponentially.
That makes total sense.
According to that competitor VP, if you combine that impeccable safety record with the heavy iron to protect the schedule, you eliminate roughly 90% of the potential competitive field right out of the gate.
Wow. So the hyperscaler isn't reviewing 10 bids, they're reviewing maybe 2.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm going to put my skeptical side hat on here and push back a bit.
Go for it.
If the margins are this incredibly rich, if we were talking premium pricing and an artificially narrowed competitive field, why wouldn't a massive global general contractor just take this market? Like, I'm talking about the giant EPC firms, an AECOM or a Bechtel.
Right, the mega firms.
Yeah. They have billions in capital. They have fortress balance sheets. Why don't they just buy the yellow iron, adopt a strict safety protocol, and eat Sterling's lunch?
It's probably the most common bear case question out there. And the answer lies in the fundamental business model of an EPC, which stands for Engineering, Procurement, and Construction.
Right.
We actually have an answer directly from the source on this. In another AlphaSense interview, there was an expert who serves as the director of quality at AECOM, and they specifically addressed this exact dynamic.
What do they say?
They explain that giant international EPCs are built to manage a mega project from the type down. They want to sit in a climate-controlled trailer, look at a finished, stamped schematic, and manage a spreadsheet of subcontractors.
Okay, so they are generalists managing the process, not necessarily the people swinging the hammers or driving the dozers.
Exactly. But hyperscale data center builds don't work like that anymore. They use what is called fast-track integrated project delivery.
Meaning they are designing it while they build it.
Basically, yeah. The hyperscaler needs to start moving millions of cubic yards of dirt before the final building design is even finished. It is highly chaotic.
So the big EPCs hate that.
They do. Giant generalists lack the highly targeted, boots-on-the-ground entrepreneurial capability to pivot and execute rapidly in the mud. Sterling thrives because they specialize deeply in assuming the massive, undesigned risks of early-stage infrastructure.
That is a fascinating distinction.
Yeah, and the big EPC firms actually prefer to hire Sterling as a partner rather than try to compete with them on the earth-moving.
So just to recap the moat here, the heavy iron and the bonding capacity form the barrier, the schedule assurance and safety records secure the premium pricing, and the sheer operational mud and chaos specialization keeps the global EPC generalists away.
That's the playbook.
That is a highly defensible moat. But if we are modeling out the next 5 years, we really need to look at how Sterling is actively trying to expand that moat. I want to shift to the $505 million acquisition of CEC Facilities Group.
Yeah, this is where the story shifts from just dominating earth-moving to full early life cycle dominance.
Right. So late 2023, Sterling acquired CEC for roughly a 9.6x EBITDA multiple.
Which is a very strategic purchase. CEC is a premier electrical and mechanical specialty contractor.
And just to anchor this for the listener, according to the Sidoti research, if you survey hyperscalers, the top two bottlenecks that cause cascading delays on these campuses are specialty site preparation, the dirt work, and electrical work.
The two hardest things to get right.
Exactly. Sterling conquered the dirt. But perfectly flat dirt doesn't compute data. The second the dirt is ready, the client hits the electrical grid bottleneck. So Sterling didn't just buy another bulldozer company, they bought the electrical contractor.
They did, but the strategic value isn't just cross-selling electrical work to their dirt clients. It structurally changes how the actual project is physically built on the site.
How so?
Well, traditionally, the construction industry works in series, one step, then the next. The heavy bulldozers and the delicate electrical trenching teams, they cannot physically operate in the same space without severe safety risks.
Right, you can't have a giant earth mover backing over a guy laying cable.
Exactly. So historically, the site prep guys finish, they pack up their equipment, they completely demobilize, and they leave. Only then do the electrical contractors mobilize, arrive on site, lay the conduit, and build the duct banks.
And let's make sure we are all picturing the same thing here. When we say duct banks, we aren't talking about tossing a few standard PVC pipes into a shallow trench. We are talking about massive, heavily engineered underground concrete fortresses designed to protect the miles of high voltage cabling required to power tens of thousands of AI servers. It is incredibly intricate, heavy civil engineering.
It really is. And previously, it had to wait until the massive earth movers were completely gone. But what Sterling just did with the CEC acquisition is they brought both of those critical paths under one roof.
So by bringing CEC in-house, Sterling isn't just cross-selling services. They are effectively selling time. They're offering a single point of accountability that structurally changes the project timeline.
Exactly. Because Sterling's management now controls both the heavy iron operators and the electrical teams under one unified digital blueprint, they can microschedule the 120-acre site.
So they can execute in parallel.
Right. While the bulldozers are doing the heavy grading on the north end of the campus, the CEC electrical teams are safely laying duct banks and pulling conduit on the south end.
That's brilliant.
And William Blair's analysis points out that this parallel execution has the potential to shave 1 to 2 entire months off the total build cycle.
Shaving 2 months off a multi-billion-dollar AI data center build, the return on investment for an Amazon or a Meta is just staggering.
It's massive.
And is there precedent for this? Like, do we know this integration actually works in the field?
We do. We aren't just theorizing here. Sterling actually has a historical proof of concept.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Management noted on a recent earnings call that a previous, much smaller tuck-in acquisition of a dry utilities business resulted in a 40% margin improvement on those jobs.
40% just from combining it with site development.
Just from the integration, you optimize the equipment utilization, you completely eliminate the weeks of downtime during the handover phase, and you strip out the friction.
Okay, I hear the strategic logic, but let's address the massive elephant in the room here. A $500 million acquisition is incredibly risky.
Always.
You are taking a heavy civil dirt moving culture and slamming it together with a highly technical electrical engineering culture. The integration risk alone could destroy that 20% margin if they mismanage the overlapping schedules, or, you know, if key CEC executives just walk out the door. How is the buy side getting comfortable with that execution risk?
It is a totally valid concern, and, you know, integration friction is always the silent killer of M&A. But the buy side is getting comfortable because of the structural alignment of the end market.
Meaning they serve the same masters?
Exactly. Over 80% of CEC's revenue comes from mission-critical blue-chip clients that are identical to Sterling's target base. They are already speaking the exact same language of schedule assurance, safety, and capacity constraint.
Got it.
Which actually brings up the most critical piece of downside protection for the entire Sterling thesis. End market fungibility.
Right, because everything we've discussed so far perfectly explains the staggering 67% organic e-infrastructure growth we saw in their recent quarter. But as an institutional investor, you have to model for the downside.
Always.
What happens if the AI and hyperscaler build cycle eventually cools off? What happens if hyperscalers pause their build cycles to digest the capacity they've already built? Does this fungibility make Sterling an infrastructure chameleon? If recession hits one sector, can they truly just drive their bulldozers across the street to a government-subsidized onshoring project without losing margin?
Well, if you look at the risk factors cited by Spiefel and William Blair, a slowdown in data center construction is right at the top of the list. But Sterling possesses a unique structural advantage, which is asset and expertise fungibility, meaning their tools and their skills are not locked into one specific technological use case.
Explain how that works in practice. I mean, dirt is dirt.
Exactly. Dirt is dirt. Think about the physical mechanics of what Sterling is doing. The massive earth moving, the rock excavation, the soil stabilization, and the intricate concrete duct bank construction required for an AI data center physically, that process is virtually identical to what is required to build a semiconductor fabrication plant.
Oh, interesting. Or an EV battery plant.
Or a massive biopharmaceutical manufacturing facility.
Yes. So if hyperscale demand pauses, Sterling does not need to retool its core technological capabilities. They don't have to retrain their workforce on new machines.
No, the heavy machinery simply pivots to other CHIPS Act or onshoring mega projects. And this is where the CEC acquisition actually acts as a massive hedge.
How so?
Because while Sterling was dominating data centers, the vast majority of CEC's historical work has been in the semiconductor space. CEC brings deep, pre-existing, decades-long relationships with major semiconductor players like Intel, Samsung, and Texas Instruments.
Ah, so Sterling didn't just buy electrical capabilities. They bought an immediate warm pipeline into these highly complex alternative end markets.
Exactly. If data centers slow down, they lean into the semiconductor relationships CEC brings to the table. Mm-hmm. And if semiconductors slow down, they pivot the heavy iron to EV or pharma.
That is incredible downside protection.
And remember, the broader macroeconomic picture here. We are in the middle of a massive demographic and legislative tailwind in the United States. You have the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, and you have the CHIPS Act.
There is a multi-year, multi-billion-dollar runway of capital being deployed.
Right. Capital flowing into advanced manufacturing and reshoring. Sterling has positioned itself at the absolute base layer of all of it. They exited the low-bid, low-margin residential and highway work years ago and engineered a company perfectly suited for this specific moment in industrial history.
Well, this has been an incredibly revealing look at how a seemingly traditional industry can generate tech-like margins. Let's synthesize the core thesis for you, the institutional listener. We started by asking if Sterling's 20-plus percent EBITDA margins were just a cyclical peak or the result of a compounding moat.
And the evidence points to a moat.
A very deep one. Based on the synthesis of these broker notes and the expert network interviews, those margins appear heavily defended. It starts with that $200 million heavy iron barrier, which is secured by a safety record that eliminates 90% of competitors right away.
Then it's accelerated by the time-saving parallel execution of the CEC integration.
Exactly. And it's backstopped by the absolute fungibility of their assets across multiple secular megatrends.
It is really a masterclass in strategic positioning. They aren't just riding a wave. They own the surfboard and they own the beach.
But as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with a final forward-looking thought to ponder on your own. It builds on everything we've discussed today regarding the mechanics of parallel execution.
Okay, let's hear it.
If Sterling's model of parallel execution for site prep and electrical work successfully shaves months off hyperscaler timelines, how long until Amazon, Meta, and Google make parallel execution a mandatory requirement in their initial RFPs?
Wow, that is the multi-billion-dollar question.
Right. Think about the implications. If that happens, it wouldn't just give Sterling an edge. It could permanently lock the remaining fragmented competitors out of the mega project market entirely. because almost no one else has both the heavy iron and the complex electrical engineering capabilities under one roof. The moat wouldn't just be wide, the drawbridge would be permanently pulled up. Keep digging into the sources, and we'll see you next time.